Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Starts with Walker Wilson. Do you reside in District 4?
Well, I don't think it's any secret that the house I own is in District 3, and I can see it's close from here to the front door we walked in, District 4. I live in East Hill, in an area that was gerrymandered out for a member of ECUA back 20 years ago, because he lived in that area so that he could continue to run for office. I fully plan to be a resident of District 4 when I'm elected. And again, you know, I grew up in District 4 when me and my parents moved here when I was 4 and a half from Northwest Georgia. We lived on Hilltop in Scenic Heights. Went kindergarten through 12th grade in District 4 schools. The first election I ever won was student body president right down the street at Ferry Pass Middle School. So I am a District 4 boy through and through. When you buy a house at 26 years old, you don't really think about what political district you live in. And unfortunately, I am a street and a half away. But rest assured, I will be a District 4 resident when I win this election. Thank you.
First thing, Mr. Walker Wilson, it's when my parents and I moved here. It's not when me and my parents moved here, okay? These are the things my brain hears. No, but it's the kind of question that, to me, it would matter maybe. This is the District 4, what do you want to call it, forum, I think. We don't call them debates anymore. We call them forums, which I think is kind of a weird thing. But okay, fine. This was the District 4 for County Commissioner forum that was held at Marcus Point Baptist Church, if I remember correctly, at the behest of the JoJo Finley Drive folks. Those are the folks who do not have representation right now in the County Commission because the governor has not appointed a replacement for Robert Bender since January. And though I hate to admit it, I think we are, in fact, going to see nobody put into that seat until after the primary. The only question right now, and here's why. I hate this. I think it's bad governance. It's not a good thing for the people to be without a representative on the board. The problem now is you're talking about, like, what, 2 months away? Three months away? I guess 3 months away. And so if you appoint somebody now, they're only going to be there until November. And if you pick somebody now who's one of the candidates, well, now you're picking the winner, right? And it's going to take them a couple of months even just to barely learn the job, and they're only going to barely know the job. So if you pick somebody who's a candidate, you're sort of putting your finger on the scale for the election. And if you pick somebody who's not a candidate, like somebody who says that they don't want the job, which a couple of the applicants for the slot had said they don't particularly want the job full time, well, now you've put them on there for such a short period of time that what's the point? You know, what do you get for those 5 months, basically, on the board? So the only question now in my mind is whether the governor waits until after the primary to appoint somebody or waits until after the election and just lets the election happen. My suspicion is after the primary, if only because then they're going to run, you know, against Ed Helms as the Democrat. And I mean, you know, come on. So Ron Helms, excuse me, not Ed. I don't know where to get Ed Helms from. Anyway, from Ron Helms. It's a heavily Republican district. It seems almost impossible that anybody who is a Democrat would win. So conversation being had about this started with, well, not started with, there were other things here, but Gene Valentino, former county commissioner for District 2 in Escambia County, what's now been acquired by Jeff Bergosh into District 1 in the redistricting, what I would say was a gerrymandering, but, you know, he disagrees, but that's fine. Anyway, Gene Valentino doing the hosting. I thought doing a good job of asking, you know, serious questions and getting them to answer. This one in particular is interesting because Walker doesn't live in district. But according to the requirements of the law, you don't have to live in district until after you, you know, win the election. So he says he would move when he lives very close and he's lived his whole life in the area. It would matter if somebody didn't live in district if they had no experience in the district, really. You know, but then again, I don't know. We go back a couple of years. We look at other candidates who didn't live in district and would move into the district. And it just, it seems like a silly formality to hold against somebody unless what you really mean to say is, well, they don't understand the district. And you'd be hard-pressed to say that that's the case with Walker Wilson. You know, obviously he knows the district. Obviously he knows District 4 and the county. And, you know, that's not an issue. So the reason you would raise residency is as sort of your flag evidence that somebody doesn't know the area, doesn't know the district. And even if they live technically outside the district, as Walker Wilson does, it's a pretty weak argument. Nevertheless, a couple of the other candidates kind of, you know, had mentioned it a little bit. Ron Helms had mentioned it a little bit. Ashley Hoffberger, one of the other candidates for District 4.
I do live, like I said, in East Hill in District 4. My husband and I moved to our beautiful home in October of 2021. And I think it is also worth noting that District 3 is currently up for re-election as well.
Mr. Mitchell.
That's a bit of a joke because District 3 is Commissioner May, Lumen May's district. It's a very heavily minority and Democrat district, right? In fact, it was created to be a heavily minority district, which in turn these days means that it's a Democrat district. And I mean, like, I live in District 3. And, you know, Walker actually was a candidate for the school board in District 3 several years ago, which is where he actually does live. But this is a bit, I mean, she even knows this is a bit of a silly, you know, suggestion. Like, you know, why don't you just run in District 3 against Lumen May? Oh, okay. Now, you know, things have maybe changed in the last 4 years, but Lumen did win 90% of the vote in the Democrat primary against his brother 4 years ago. And, you know, I don't even think he's got opposition this year. I have to check back and see if that's the case. He might have opposition this year. I just haven't been following the District 3 all that closely because I figure it's a, you know, it's a slam dunk. Anyway, but I should probably check before I talk about that on the air. Anyway, so she came back to this a little bit later.
Being an actual resident of District 4, I have a vested interest in making sure our community is able to maintain our hometown charm while growing at a sustainable rate.
Yeah. So I would advise not using that approach. That would be my advice. By the way, I think Ashley's very capable. I like her. She's smart. And she runs a business. You know, we've had her on the show. And we've had all of them on the show except for Ron. And I probably ought to have him on the show for the rap, too. But I don't know. I don't like the look. It's, again, if there were the case to be made that Walker doesn't really know, then maybe. Okay, otherwise the jabs seem a little bit, I don't know, beneath her. Frankly, 437-1620, lots of other comments about things that they, you know, talked about in here. Another one that had come up in the conversation was, and I thought this was actually really, again, I thought Gene Valentino asked really good questions. One question was, okay, do you view yourself as representing the whole county? Because in Escambia County, we elect our commissioners on the basis of, you know, only the people who live in that district get to vote for that commissioner. As opposed to in Santa Rosa County, where the whole county votes for every single commissioner. It's just a residency requirement. In which case, what you would say is that the residency requirement is much more like a true formality. Whereas in this case, it's a little bit more substantial. Okay, so which way is better? Is it better that the whole county get to vote on everybody or not? Ashley Hoffberger?
I think that you get out of people, whether it's work or politics, what you incentivize them for. That's why when you create bonus structures for people, you bonus them off of what you want them to do. The way that our system is set up is that the county commissioners treat it like Hunger Games, and it's my district, my district, my district. What are you going to do for my district? We're not incentivized to do what's best for the community as a whole. I think overall we need to look at changing that. I think we need to do what's best for the community as a whole and events everyone together, because yes, I live in District 4, but every business I own is outside of District 4. I have best friends that live outside of District 4. We do life outside of District 4. So we've got to get over this district mentality, and we have to look at it as a community.
So I agree with that. I also think that it's maybe a little bit unfair to call it like Hunger Games. I don't think we draw a random set of contestants out of District 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 and put them together in a coliseum and see who kills each other the fastest. But still, you know, she's not wrong in the sense of there being a little bit of district versus district. But it's more so where if a project is in somebody's district, there's a heavy amount of deference from the rest of the board to what they want to do in their district, because genuinely the other county commissioners don't represent those people. Just like in Congress, nobody in the House of Representatives represents Pensacola except for Matt Gaetz. Nobody else represents Pensacola except for, and you know, Crestview and Niceville and Gulf Breeze except for Matt Gaetz. And so, you know, if there were something that were very particular to this district in Congress, it'd be weird if people outside of the district invested themselves heavily in, you know, caring too much about something that was particular to our district. It does happen occasionally, but, you know, there's at least supposed to be that kind of effort. Well, the same thing here. And that's a problem in a way, because it means that, you know, each person winds up being like the, you know, the district director or something, which is not really a good fit for a board where all five of them have to vote and three have to. I mean, this became a big problem for what used to be District 2, Perdido, Key, and Perdido, and then Inner Island, because you had the other three, at least, commissioners were consistently voting to do whatever they wanted and not do what Doug Underhill wanted when he was the district commissioner, because they hated him so much. And that's, I mean, the whole system is not healthy in that regard. Buck Mitchell, his comments about this?
Yeah, certainly. You're representing the entire county. I know that Gulf Breeze, the whole county votes on the one district, but like I said earlier, each district needs a champion. Each district needs somebody that they can look at and is, you know, basically their mayor. You might put it in that terms. I mean, I think that it's important that we know that when you're elected, that you are making decisions for the entire county, but also that you know the issues of your individual district, and that the citizens of that area can reach out to you and you alone to be able to fix it.
Yeah, I think he's a little bit on both sides of this answer. I don't particularly favor that. But on the one hand, he seems to want the idea of a champion for each district, like he says, like the mayor, which it is most definitely not like that, in the sense that they have to really get permission from the rest of the board to do anything. You know, because one vote doesn't accomplish anything. You have to have three. I do agree with him that there is something sort of nice about having one person who's accountable for what goes on in that district. I mean, you know, what happens on the beach, you blame or credit Robert Bender for it when he was in office. And, you know, what goes on in, you know, I don't know, in Century, you blame or credit Stephen Berry for it. And there's truth to that. There's a value to that. But we are in this weird system because of the racial history where the board decides, but the individual is accountable. It's kind of an odd system. And there are very few counties across the state of Florida that have it this way. And you get weird results. But people in Escambia County typically think that the way they do it in Santa Rosa is weird. Because, you know, for example, you got a District 3 commissioner over there, James Calkins, who runs his campaign on the basis of and gets elected on the basis of what happens during his campaigning and the contributions out of District 4 and 5, largely, which are nowhere close to his district. So either system has weird elements. I'll just put it that way. But it's whether, you know, do you want representatives or do you want senators? That's very, very generally and broadly what we have. You know, the Santa Rosa is more like the senators, and Escambia is more like the House of Representatives. 523 on News Radio Pensacola, I'm Andrew McKay.
When you use Bounce dryer sheets and your clothes look amazing, it's the sheet. Less static in your life? Yeah, it's the sheet. Smelling fresher than ever? It's the sheet. Oh, so soft fabric? Ooh la la. It's the sheet. Less wrinkles on your clothes, you know it's the sheet. Bounce dryer sheets. More freshness, more softness. Less static, less wrinkles. It's the sheet.
Join Lori from Davis Hardware and U-Haul on Pep Talk today at 10 a.m. for Davis Hardware and U-Haul's show, talking about what makes Davis Hardware your go-to place for those hard-to-find items. Listen to Lori and find out more about Davis Hardware's solutions for a happy home and a happy life. Your home is talking to you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
We used to argue about whose turn it was to clean the gutters, but then I had Leaf Filter Gutter Protection installed.
Wait, I told you Leaf Filter had free inspections and estimates and a lifetime guarantee.
Meaning we never have to argue about whose turn it is to clean the gutters again.
But I visited leaffilter.com/beacon first.
No, I did.
It doesn't matter who. Visit leaffilter.com/beacon to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off today.
See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
News Radio Pensacola on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
That was totally wicked!
Good morning, 525 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom. David, are you there?
I am here.
Outstanding. Let's hear some news.
Absolutely. Well, voters are heading to the polls in five different states today. Apparently, there's some primaries being held in Iowa, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, and South Dakota.
That's so early.
Yeah.
Their primaries are now for the general election? Wow. Okay. All right.
Yeah. President Biden is expected to take executive action today to limit asylum seekers when the number of migrant crossings surges. The executive order that's expected today would allow border authorities to turn away people who are seeking asylum once daily border crossings hit 2,500.
Isn't this basically what Trump did a few years ago and they ruled it illegal? And the Democrats opposed it at the time?
Roughly, yeah. Just, roughly the same thing. Yeah.
No, seriously. They say they looked at the Trump policy getting struck down and said, well, we've tweaked the policy so that now it's got the right exemptions in it. I mean, yeah, we're doing what Trump did, and we said he was an idiot at the time, but it is an election year now, and we got to be seen to do something.
What was illegal about it? Trump did it.
Yeah, right.
That's
I mean, that's good answer, right?
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will reportedly be addressing Congress next week. The Hill is reporting that Netanyahu will address a joint meeting of Congress on June 13th.
Be honest. Is it in your head? What I asked you yesterday?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I had to fight it the whole time.
Should I tell him? I should probably tell him that I brought it up.
Go ahead, yeah.
Wait, is this a bad idea for me to tell him? Okay, so this is my own brain. It's my own fault. There's no one to blame but me. But every time I hear somebody say Benjamin Netanyahu, in my head what I hear is Benjamin Netanyahu. And now all of you will as well. Because yesterday I mentioned...
You can't get it out of your head. You can't get it out of your head.
I mentioned it to David and I said, is there any part of you when you hear this that this is what you hear? And you said, no... But now I never will not be able to.
Yeah, every time.
So you're fighting it now when you're doing the news. Oh, man. Were you done? I mean, over? Was that it? Third one?
Yeah. I'm done. Yeah.
I think so. My work here is done. David, thanks so much for the update. That's such a curse, too, because now that's all you'll be able to think about. Not you, but like people in general who heard me talking about all you'll ever be able to think about when you hear that is. I'm so sorry. Still funny. 5:28 on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Somebody here says we're talking about the districting and who lives where and the county commission seats that are up. Somebody says, well, let's send Lumen May over to the empty district and then I'll take over his district until they vote someone new in. Andrew for district commissioner. Okay, so I will never ever run. I'm unelectable. Plus, I don't want it. It's a hell of a job to run for politics. I you know what? Even the people that I truly cannot stand and think should never be allowed anywhere near a dull knife, let alone an elected office, I still admire the fact that they run for office. Because it, I mean, going door to door and talking to strangers and telling them you're the greatest and you can solve their problems for them and taking the harassment and the abuse and the lies that get told about you or the truths that get told about. They have something I don't have. I'll tell you, I'm not ever going to be. If I got appointed and all I had to do was fill the role and didn't ever have to campaign, I'd maybe consider it. But that would be short term, and I'd have to go with the radio show. So no, not going to happen. 437-1620. Somebody here says, with voting at large like in Santa Rosa County, a commissioner could lose his district in votes but still win or retain his seat. That's correct. I'd rather have each district vote only for their representative. There are advantages and disadvantages to both. Now, I will say that historically, the advantage to the at-large elections, the claim has been at least we get people who work together fairly well. And historically on the Santa Rosa County Commission, that actually used to be true. You get a more congenial board because they're all basically elected by the same people. But these days, I would say that's not accurate anymore. And so it's hard to make the case that always produces, you know, harmony and civility, or what Gene Valentino called esprit de corps.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. A jury of 6 women and 6 men ready for opening statements this morning in Hunter Biden's federal gun trial.
The jury panel includes one retired Secret Service agent whose spouse was a D.C. police officer, several gun owners, and a man whose father was killed by a gun. 5 jurors reported close relationships to people with drug addiction, something central to the case. Now, this morning, the prosecution will go first for opening statements, followed by the First Son's defense team.
Fox's Jackie Abania is reporting. Executive action expected from President Biden.
This executive order would shut down asylum requests between ports of entry once illegal border crossings hit 2,500.
Fox's Madeline Rivera. Excessive heat warning out west begins 11 a.m. Pacific time until Thursday, 8 p.m. Triple-digit heat for California Central Valley and other parts, including Las Vegas. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. 5:31 at News Radio Pensacola. I'm David Wayne. Right now, 74 degrees and cloudy skies. A 39-year-old man is charged in a shooting that reportedly stemmed from an argument over a tree limb. According to jail records, Derek Sewell is charged with attempted homicide. The Escambia Sheriff's Office says around 9 o'clock yesterday on Capitol Boulevard, 2 neighbors were arguing over tree limbs that allegedly led to Sewell shooting his neighbor in the leg.
What's up there, bro? That goes on your top. Huh? It's on him. Right, come on. All right, go. All right. You want to hit me?
And that audio, apparently from Ring camera footage during that incident obtained by Channel 3, that shows Sewell throwing portions of the limb in the neighbor's direction, followed by the neighbor swinging at Sewell. Sewell then retreats back into the house and retrieves a gun. The victim was transported to a local hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. Pensacola police are investigating the circumstances behind a car fire in the Cordova Park neighborhood over the weekend. According to the News Journal, that car was parked at a home on Hallmark Drive, and that is near the home of Escambia County Clerk and Comptroller Pam Childers. The fire started shortly after 5 o'clock on Saturday morning. PPD's Mike Wood says an arson investigation is ongoing. They're currently adding more patrols to that area. The Santa Rosa Island Authority's executive director, Lee Davis, is stepping down this month. Davis has been leading the island authority since 2021. She says she's leaving to spend more time with family and get some traveling in, but does plan to seek another job where she can benefit the community in the future. The SRIA board voted to offer that job to Gulf Breeze attorney Mike Burns last month. A special meeting will be held to finalize his contract on June 12th. Well, if you're a Santa Rosa Sound boater or a Navarre or Okaloosa Island beachgoer, this message is for you. Eglin Air Force Base officials have announced that they are increasing fines for trespassing violations in the Santa Rosa Island closed test area. That area stretches west of the El Matador condominiums in Fort Walton Beach all the way to Navarre Beach. The previous fine was $65, but has now been increased to a minimum of $250 for a first-time offense. The U.S. District Court modified the fines for violations of laws and regulations enforced by the United States within the base's boundaries. According to a release from Eglin Air Force Base, the 96th Security Forces Squadron will be issuing citations to trespassers. It is 5:34 at News Radio Pensacola. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We are going to be seeing some spotty showers and thunderstorms through the morning and afternoon. 30% chance of rain overall. High near 87 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 75. Spotty rain chances continue for our Wednesday with some thunderstorms possible. 30% chance of rain. High 89 degrees. Overnight Wednesday, temperatures dropping near 74. 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms on Thursday with a high near 88. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
And right now, 75 degrees in Pensacola, 76 in Gulf Breeze, 73 in Milton. Your next news at 6 o'clock and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio Pensacola.
ZipRecruiter's advanced technology identifies the candidates with the skills you need, sends you a list of great matches to review, then actively invites them to apply for your job. And the results speak for themselves. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. That's right, the first day. Now you can focus on your business and let ZipRecruiter do the work finding the best people for you. See for yourself. Experience the ease, efficiency, and power of ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Remember when washing machines were made in America, were solidly built, and actually got your clothes clean? They aren't a thing of the past. They are Speed Queen, and they are available at Tops Appliance. Speed Queen washer and dryers combine durability and technology into the best washers and dryers in the world. Speed Queen will change the way you think about washing machines. They're built to last longer and deliver exceptional wash results. Unlike many other washers and dryers with plastic parts, Speed Queen uses commercial-grade steel and porcelain components designed to give you at least 25 years of reliable, trouble-free operation. That's why they come with lifetime warranties, the best warranties in the business. See store for warranty details. Speed Queen washers and dryers are built to work and built to last. If you want durability, innovation, and perfectly done laundry the first time, then you want Speed Queen. See these great Speed Queen washers and dryers for yourself at Tops Appliance on Highway 90 in Milton, just east of Stewart Street.
The Pensacola Little Theater presents the pop cultural phenomenon Rent from June 7th through the 23rd. See this stage spectacular with songs that rock and a story that resonates with audiences of all ages. Rent follows a year in the life of a group of impoverished young artists and musicians struggling to survive and create in New York's Lower East Side. See how these young bohemians negotiate their dreams, loves, and conflicts in this groundbreaking musical. Tickets are available at the PLT box office or at PensacolaLittleTheater.com.
Bands on the Beach, presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority, every Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. It's hot in the summer, but you can bring a blanket or a lawn chair and relax and enjoy the sunset with your favorite bands. This week, the New Cahoots. It's an acoustic duo from Pensacola. Michael Garcia and Gordon Frank blend sounds of folk, bluegrass, and Americana. This week, Bands on the Beach is sponsored by Bill Manning Real Estate and Kuhn Realty. See you at 7 o'clock at the Gulfside Pavilion for Bands on the Beach.
Are you ready for a triple dose of wit, insight, and laughter? Tune in to News Radio Pensacola for the Markley, Van Camp, and Robin Show from 11 to 2. Your daily dose of engaging conversation and hilarious banter. Join Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins as they tackle the biggest news stories, pop culture moments, and everything in between. They'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud from start to finish. Don't miss a minute of the fun. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robin Show, 11 till 2 on News Radio Pensacola.
Well, life on the farm, I kind of laid back. Ain't much an old country boy to me can't hack. Early to rise, early in the sack. I thank God I'm a country boy.
And I can take you for a ride on my big green tractor.
We're just country boys and girls getting down on the farm.
say.
Goodbye, city life.
Thank God I'm a country boy. Woo-hoo!
Yes, every month we check in with our good friend Ryan Jenkins, the owner of Jenkins Farms up in Jay, Florida, to find out what's going on last month with his farming endeavors and also the farming community in general. Ryan, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning. How are y'all doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great. I make the life better, but you make the life. Put it that way. You know, that's
the idea.
I don't
know about that.
So last time we checked in with you, you were concerned about things being a little bit dry. And I believe, and I hate to bring it up, but you had made the comment that what we really don't need is some really harsh weather. And then?
That's right. We talked about that. It was funny. I was looking through my notes. That was on the 6th of last month, and I was looking through my notes before the show today, and I thought, well, pretty much everything I talked about happened. But, you know, that's the way it goes in farming. You know, when we talked last time, we were dry. We couldn't continue planting because we didn't have enough moisture to plant. We needed a little bit of rain. And, you know, I forget sometimes to specify when I talk with God. I learned a long time ago I need to specify how much I need because he might just put a lot on me. So, and I forgot to mention that, and he did, and I'm thankful for it. But I don't know if all the viewers know it or remember it, but the north half of the county had a very, very bad storm. We talked on a Monday, and then that Friday morning about 3 o'clock, the lights went out, and it got bad. It was literally like hurricane type damage over a large area in the north end of the county, and lots and lots of trees and debris down, barns blown down, houses messed up. People without power for 3 or 4 days. It was literally like very reminiscent of a hurricane. And, of course, you know, we had talked about our wheat and oats being ready to harvest, and the last thing we needed then, it looked like a really good crop, and we didn't need any bad wind or anything like that. Of course, we got that, and it put a damper on things, and it slowed us down some, and we lost some yield on our wheat and oats. We're finished with our oats. We finished combining those. Our wheat, we just like one day being done with that. So we're almost through. But it's really, really a busy time because everything is very sensitive to time this time of year.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that about the folks who live down, you know, in Milton and Pensacola and Gulf Breeze not being aware. And I think you're right. I think, you know, when you tell me that's what it was like, it's hard for me to, I'm like, what? Like, we didn't even have the power out, you know? But the north end of the county got swiped really bad. Both counties got swiped really bad. I mean, I know there was a tornado, you know, two, I think,
that's
if
right.
I'm not mistaken. And, you know, to hear
that's
that
right.
And to hear about the power being out for more than even a day, it's just, you know, obviously that's exactly the kind of weather you were hoping not to get. And it is the weather that you exactly got. So what has that meant for you in terms of, you know, you can't just quit. So what do you do when that happens?
No,
do you replant?
Well, I actually had, there was one place in Allentown where we have a large section of land that we farm, and we had a cotton field that had just come up. It had been planted and it had just emerged. Little plants were out of the ground. And it got really bad through there, lots of damage. There were about 8 or 10 light poles in a row broken off right through there. And it ruined that over 200 acres of cotton, and we had to replant that. And that's just a lot. That's a lot of money. There's the cost of replanting, which is, you know, you might as well just throw a rough number out there and say it cost about $100 an acre to replant that. So that's $20,000+ right there. Of replant costs that there's no insurance for or no anything like that. That just comes out of your pocket. But there's also at the end of the year, when you harvest that cotton, we planted that cotton at a specific time for a reason. That's when we thought we would get our highest yield. So now we're a month later replanting it, and you're going to realize that in the yield at the end of the year. So you've got your replant costs, then you've got the cost of a decreased yield at the end of the year. So that $100 isn't the end of it.
Because
that could very well cost us $300 or $400 when it's all said and done.
So the net loss is you're talking like $30,000 or $40,000 off of your end of year total. Is that what you're telling me?
Correct.
Yeah. And I assume that's because you plant it when you plant it in order to make sure that for cotton that it gets the total number of heat units that you guys calculate that it's got to get to reach full maturity. And now since it came in later, it's just not going to have that same number of days of heat. And so it's, unless really bizarre things happen, it's not going to produce anywhere near the yield that the other would. Is that basically right?
That's correct. Mm. And those numbers you use, it's going to be higher than that. The loss will be higher than that over that field. You know, that field was about 215 acres.
Wow. So, and that's just that one field, just to put it in perspective. I still to this day don't fully understand the whole idea of how crop insurance works, but I guess it's in part, and I mean, I know it's because it's a combined shared cost between you and the insurer, and it's not 100%, and people think that it's like their home insurance, and it just isn't. But also, I assume that there are kind of like deadlines for you to meet so that if you've got the plants in the ground, then they'd be eligible for the insurance. Am I thinking about this the right way, and how does the storms affect that?
That's right. So like replanting that cotton the other day, there was no insurance for that. We just, like I say, we just have to pay for that on our own. But there are plant dates. They know that after a certain date, the chance of you making a normal yield are almost zero, right? It takes so much time for each crop to make a crop. So they have final plant dates, and those are coming up. Peanuts is June the 5th, and cotton's June the 10th. So we have those dates. That's the last date that you can get 100% of your insurance. After that, they give you another few days. I can't remember. I'd have to look it up. 10 or 15 days. But the amount of your insurance decreases every day that you're late planting your crop until it gets to a certain point where they won't insure it anymore.
So every year you're kind of, I guess, kind of racing against those deadlines based on timing and opportunity and the soil being appropriately wet to plant and all that kind of stuff. I assume that the storms interfere with this plan and make it so you're more up against that deadline than you would otherwise be. Is that true?
That's correct. So we still like a couple of days of peanut planting, for example. And the deadline on that, the last time to get your 100% of your insurance is on June the 5th. And it's, you know, we've gotten, 3 inches or so of rain. So it's too wet to get in the field. I can't plant today, even though I need to be planting. When is June 5th? I don't even know.
That's a Wednesday. Maybe. Yeah, it's Monday. That's Wednesday.
Right. So if it'll dry off today and we can miss the thunderstorm today, maybe I can get done by Wednesday. And the same thing with cotton. And the other thing is we're double cropping these crops, some of these crops behind the wheat and oats. So it has to be good weather to get those crops harvested. Then we have to go in there and work the soil, put out our fertilizer, blah, blah, blah. You know, all the different things that we have to do and get them planted in a timely manner. But typically you got to have it dry for the wheat or oat harvest. And then you're going to need some moisture to be able to plant your money crop, as I call it. So, you know, it's a time crunch right there, and that's where we're at right this minute.
So you
need
to
get in there and finish planting our crop.
You need to be wet enough to plant, and then you need it to be sort of dry enough to harvest. But then you also need it to be wet enough to replant when you're double cropping, and then it's got to be dry enough to not destroy it.
That's why we don't do more acres of double crop than we do. I mean, you've got this land sitting there that you're paying for, and you've got all this equipment that you're paying for. So naturally, you'd love to get two crops off of one year, right? But it's too dangerous. It's too risky to try to do too many acres of that. That's why, I mean, we do about roughly a quarter of what we farm with double crop.
So what happens if you can't get the second one in? Do you just give up on that land, or do you put it in with expecting a lower yield? Or, I mean, what happens?
I will never not put something in.
Okay.
And soybeans, you can plant those a lot later. We haven't even started on our soybeans yet. So very worst case scenario is somewhere you were planning on planting peanuts or cotton, and then you get push back. You know, I would feel comfortable planting soybeans up until July.
Okay.
So
there's
we have
something.
That option. But
And on the meeting the insurance deadline, it's not that you can't continue to plant those crops. It's that you can't insure them. And so, which, of course, is also tied to the fact that they're not going to yield as much because they're being planted so much later in the season, all of that kind of combined together. Right. So you might plant them, but they're not.
It's a big moving target.
I thought farming seemed so easy. I mean, you just lazy driving those tractors on the side of the road and, you know, chewing on a piece of straw and life is simple, right?
Living the dream. It's a nightmare, but we're living it.
Hey, before we go, we always like to end with a farm fact or did you know something about farming? I know you always have one for me, Ryan.
Yeah, you know how a lot of times you'll see on social media, I'll post stuff. I'll be in a field of peanut M&Ms or cotton underwear. Just to bring awareness to what products come from some of the things we grow. And you know, while I'm doing oats, I'm a big oatmeal cream pie fan. Always talk about them out here farming my oatmeal cream pies. Well, in reality, the oats that we grow, only about 5% of those are for human consumption. The rest of them pretty much go to animal feed. So,
okay.
When I'm talking about that, some of it's tongue-in-cheek, but still, people need to understand where their food and fiber come from, and that's the goal of what I do.
Okay, so when I'm eating peanut butter, I'm eating what Ryan Jenkins made. When I'm wearing my jeans, I'm wearing what Ryan Jenkins made. And when I'm enjoying some, burgers or something, I might indirectly be enjoying what Ryan Jenkins made because he made the oats that fed the cows that made the beef that I'm eating on my plate. Is that right?
That's right.
All right.
Or the wheat that made the bread for the
hamburgers.
Exactly
right. Interesting. Always interesting. Ryan, thank you so much for what you do. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us every month to just keep people informed and in touch with what's going on in the farming community that's so important to our economy and to just our way of life and being able to live, man. I appreciate you. Appreciate you feeding my my kids and putting food on their plate and putting clothes on their back, man. We'll talk to you again next month. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us, and I hope everybody has a great week.
Absolutely. And as Ryan always says, eat more peanuts. 551 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. If you're thinking about an educational, service that you need, you know, you're thinking about taking some college courses or you've got kids that are in high school and thinking about dual enrollment, especially if they're homeschool kids, but even if they're not, Pensacola State College is just an amazing resource. We really, I had taught at community colleges, so I'm familiar with the system. I taught at university, too. I didn't know that we'd ever use this for our kids, but, you know, of course, in Florida, you've got all kinds of mechanisms that are designed to facilitate higher education, and one of them is this dual enrollment concept, where your kids are in high school, but they're taking college courses at PSC, and then they're getting high school credit and also college credit at the same time. And we took huge advantage of this. They did 3 years at PSC while they were also in high school being homeschooled, and the two older ones did, and the younger one's getting ready to. And they got college credit so that when they went to university, they were already sophomores and a half because of this program. And, you know, the class sizes are great. The instructors are are student teacher oriented. They're focused on teaching rather than on research, something that I'd, seen historically at teaching at the university. A lot of times, they're a little bit more focused on the research instead of the practice of teaching, which typically community college teachers do that. They like teaching a lot. Variety of class times, which can be a big advantage because it's not just offered at one time. It's going to be offered at 4 or 5 different times. It's a great experience. And for my kids who had homeschooling as a background, being able to, kind of get their feet wet in classroom experience was also really, really useful. So if you have an educational need or are thinking about a change in your life or for your kids, PSC is a great resource for the traditional or the non-traditional student. Campuses in Pensacola, Warrington, Milton, Century, South Santa Rosa Center, downtown Pensacola, and Santa Rosa Industrial Park East. Find out what PSC can do to help you reach your future goals at pensacolastate.edu.
Hobbies can be fun and expensive. How about a hobby that's fun and could make you money? Find out how this Thursday morning at 10 with Emerald Coast Coins. Hear about precious metals and metal detectors as a great hobby. For nearly 20 years, Emerald Coast Coins has been one of the top-rated businesses in Northwest Florida to buy and sell gold, silver, and the best metal detectors to find treasure. Get more information about this Thursday morning on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Hey, Kevin, how's the boat running?
Well, last week I started working on the water pump, and now I can't remember how it goes back together.
Dude, stop. Call Key Marine. They'll get you and your Mercury outboard back in the water so we can go back to fishing again.
Key Marine gets the work done and lets you handle the fun. They'll fix any problem, big or small, even if the problem is you don't remember how the parts go back together. Key Marine, your Mercury outboard dealer on Bower Road in Pensacola.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
Serving overseas was just the beginning. We might be home from war, but our mission continues in communities all across the country. It's why we're out there in times of peace and crisis, providing meals to the hungry and supplies to the sick. It's why we're giving strength to those who are too weak and bringing resources to those without them. Service doesn't stop when we're done serving. It's what makes us the VFW. Learn more at vfw.org.
Pensacola right now with Joe and Austin. It's like headline news for radio every day, 4 to 7 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Wick. Yes, John Wick, that's right. I'd like to make a dinner reservation for 12.
Morning, 6:05, whatever time it is. 5:55 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. And oh my God, have you seen the kid? Have you seen the son of Representative John Rose? This has been all over the TV this morning. I had watched it yesterday. It's hilarious. So what's here's the background, okay? What's going on in Congress, in the House of Representatives, is some debate about something nobody cares anything about, and it sounds like this.
Running for president, especially on the charges brought against Donald Trump, should gravely concern every member of this body as well as every American across our country.
Okay, all right, fine. Whatever. This was Bring a Kid to Work Day, and Representative John Rose brought his redheaded son, I say that with pride. The kid might be 6, maybe 7. Not sure, somewhere in this vicinity. And the whole time his dad is speaking behind him, knowing he's on camera, he's making faces for the camera. I mean, he's mugging for the camera and he's rolling his eyes. He's doing weird stuff with his fingers. He's lolling his head to the side like he's passed out. Oh, it's it's the best thing on the internet today. So I've got it posted up on our Facebook page. You can see it for yourself. David, have you seen this?
No, but I'm about to look it up.
You have to go. Yeah, you have to. You'll die. And it's like the most beautiful thing because this kid is just, he's loving life. And, you know, dad has no idea. And I'm guessing that there's basically three people in the whole place, right, when this is happening. There's the John Rose. There's the, probably not even the speaker. I'm sure it's just like the pro tem. And then like the clerk or whatever. There's staffers up there. And probably the only person who knows this is happening is people that are watching it on video or the staff, maybe. And so the dad has no idea this is happening behind him, and it's great. Anyway, what's going on in the newsroom this morning, David?
Well, Hawaii's Kilauea volcano is erupting. The volcano had been experiencing an uptick in seismic activity for about a month. The eruption began just after midnight local time on Monday. It's the first time an eruption has been reported in that area since the 1970s. There's a dangerous heat wave hitting the west this week. California, Arizona, and Nevada all will be seeing record-setting temperatures. And a Maryland man who served as a medic in World War II has been posthumously awarded the Distinguished Service Cross for his actions during the invasion of Normandy on D-Day. During the D-Day invasion, he was then 21-year-old Waverly Woodson Jr. He spent more than 30 hours treating fellow soldiers, saved an estimated 200 lives despite being wounded himself. Woodson's son, Steve, is also hoping that this recognition could pave the way for further recognition, such as the Medal of Honor. He died in 2005 at 83.
Oh, man. D-Day, of course, comes up on Thursday. So, you know, we're 2 days right. away from it being the 80th anniversary of D-Day. That just, wow, that's amazing. David, thanks so much for the update. 5:59 here on News Radio Pensacola. What else do we have going on? Senior Chill Out comes up this Friday, June 7th at area Lowe's stores, Fairfield Drive, Airport, 9 Mile in Pensacola, Highway 98 in Gulf Breeze and Highway 90 in Pace. From 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., you can bring in donations, you can bring in fans, you can bring in AC units, and of course, generally what you do is you go into the store, you buy when you bring it out, and you donate it. So any of that available, again, that's this Friday from 6 to 6 at area Lowe's.
Listen on air at 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.